Let's talk about Filipino food in Australia. Now, if you're a dedicated foodie, you may have noticed headlines speaking of Australia's purple Filipino food revolution. It's perhaps a reference to ube, the purple yam that's popular in many Filipino dishes. But this is a revolution that's been a long time coming, a slow shift in presence of Filipino food in this country. It's a bit of a paradox in this. Filipinos are Australia's fifth largest migrant group. That may surprise you. But historically, there's been a lower literacy about Filipino cuisine in this country compared with a lot of other Southeast Asian cuisines that are perhaps more prominent. So, time for a primer. We have the perfect guests to help us through. Grace Quinto and Fides May Santos are co-founders of Entre Pinays, a collective of Filipino women working to amplify literacy around Filipino cuisine and produce here in Australia. And they are staging a special event as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival to assist us in this campaign. Grace, Fides, welcome.
Thanks, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
Grace, start us off. If you're going to generalise, make a broad, sweeping, ridiculous generalisation, the typical taste sense that would be strong in Filipino dishes, what would it be?
I would summarise it as the four flavour profiles, which we call the Philippine flavourings. It's salty, it's sour, it's bitter, and it's sweet. And the four flavours, they dominate most of the Philippine palates, and it's also sort of indicative, it is showcased in all the dishes that we enjoy as Filipino families and friends. So if we sort of like tapped into the first flavour profile, salty, right? Mm-hmm. If we think about it, we're a 7,000 island archipelago, so we're likely going to have a lot of salt waters around us. And we've actually taken advantage of that through the many things that we actually enjoy our dishes with. The first one being patis, which is basically a fish sauce that's made similarly to nam pla in Thailand and nuoc nam in Vietnamese cuisine. But essentially, it's a fermentation of either fish or small krill that's actually added into our dishes or actually used as a dipping sauce, a condiment or added part of a condiment and salsawan.
Right.
And then I guess if we go into the sourness of it, that also is indicative of our pre-colonial roots. I think sourness actually derived from vinegar, which was used as a means to actually preserve food when we didn't actually have refrigeration, because that only came later down the track during colonization and so forth. And one of the sort of marquee dishes that we would have loved would have been sinigang, which is basically it's a stew of fish or shrimp or meat. It's in a sour broth, similar to a tom yum, but definitely one that puckers up the lips and sort of allows your eyes to squint ever so slightly. Not too sour, but just enough where it's at the point of perfection and so forth.
Just the perfect pucker.
Yeah, perfect pucker, that's for sure. And then, you know, the other two being sweetness, that's in my heart. I love my sweet dishes. A lot of our desserts are coming from the Spanish colonization. We have bakes that sound very Spanish in name, ensamada, leche flan, and so forth. And that's really a sort of combination of our sugar regions in the Philippines and the addition of eggs and cream mm-hmm. and butter that came with the Spanish colonization. But then bitterness. There's one region in the Philippines that's very renowned for their bitter food that's added in through the use of bitter gourd or even the addition of the bile from the goat. So that's added as actually sort of a bitter amping up of a dish, which Ilocanos, or the people from the Ilocos region, really love and enjoy. Wow. Our dishes is a celebration of all those four, either in concert with each other or separately as well.
Fides, as Grace mentions there, an archipelago of 7,000 islands, that is extraordinary geographic complexity. I mean, how hard then is it to say this is a Philippine cuisine? That sort of variety must have great difference within it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 7,000 islands, I don't think I've even travelled, you know, an ounce of that. I'm from Luzon, so is Grace, and members of our entrepreneurs come from different parts of Philippines, and that itself is recognition of just the variety of dishes and histories and stories. So we say 7,000 islands, but there's 18 regions and 81 provinces and classified into those three distinct islands of Luzon, Visayas and Mindanao. So there is many types of dishes and ways of cooking that's, you know, fairly distinct to each region and whatnot, right, and cooking techniques, which actually has evolved over time as Filipinos adapt to changing environments, place, time and circumstance. So, you know, we see from, as Grace mentioned, there's from the northern tips of the archipelago to the most southern, the nuance of flavours varies from province to province, bitterness in the north, sweetness in the west and centre, and heat and spice in the south. So I haven't experienced a lot of the food down south, and I hope to experience that my next trip to the Philippines. So we're on this ongoing journey of learning the food cultures within each region, because, you know, we only, you know, grew up with what we ate through our families and whatnot. So it's, I think it's an invitation for us to really explore the rich culture of our food through these different regions and islands.
Is that a thing, Grace, that in the Philippines still, that the different regional cuisines are still pretty tightly held within that, you know, it's a thing of place, it doesn't spread or cross-pollinate around the archipelago?
I think there is cross-pollination. I think by virtue of Manila being the economic hub, many people from the southern tips of the Philippines go up there for in search of a better future, or you have like a dish called Bicol Express, which when we looked back at, you know, how did that come to be? The Bicol Express came to Manila. It was actually a dish that was originated in Manila, though the thought of Bicol is the fact that there's reverence to the heat that Bicol region actually brings to their dishes. But what we found out, it was actually invented in Manila through a person that sort of migrated from Bicol into Manila and actually just wanted to sort of like reminisce about the flavours that they miss from home. And so you probably will find that cross-pollination of regional dishes popping up in Manila and the Luzon region, which is a key island region where many of the economic and political and social opportunities exist. But yeah, that's also being seen in the global diaspora of where the Filipinos have spread.
Fides, we'll come to the sort of the influence of colonization and of American influence as well. But before we get to that, especially around techniques, the ideas from pre-colonial times in Filipino cuisine, what persists there?
Some of the pre-colonial influences that still exist today are primarily preservation techniques, right? So Filipinos have a long history of using preservation techniques to extend the shelf life of food, such as drying, smoking, pickling, and fermentation, which we're actually seeing a trend in right now. These techniques were used in pre-colonial times to ensure that stable food supply, especially during times of scarcity, as well as, I guess, the climate. You know, I remember every time we visited the Philippines, there's one dish that my Lola always cooked, which is adobo, because the drive to the airport, for example, for our arrival and departure would take a few hours. So she needed to feed the family, and it was always adobo because of the vinegar, and it was able to be kept in the caldero, in the back of the jeepney. And so that has been obviously, you know, a technique that's been passed down from the generations. And then obviously, you know, there are dishes like, which is fairly particular to the region I grew up in, Pampanga, which is burro, also using a fermentation type of technique using rice and salted fish. And, you know, it gets put into a little dark corner for a few days, and then you utilize that in dishes as a side dish to go with the main meal. So it's really interesting to just learn about these techniques and how they're actually becoming more, yeah, popular right now, and people trying to learn about these techniques to utilize in current cooking and ways of eating.
Well, it's so interesting that the wheel turns, doesn't it? We begin to examine things which have stood the test of time. We ask ourselves why? Well, because they're really good ideas and taste good, I guess, is the simple response to it. I mean, Grace, Spanish colonization has, of course, had a dramatic influence over the Philippines, and I suspect in food that was part of the broader picture. What happened to Filipino cooking when the Spanish came?
So when the Spanish came, they obviously brought with them their rich cuisines and taste. We don't traditionally have much milk-based products, dairy milk, that is. We use a lot of coconuts for our milky sort of desserts. But when they came along, they really wanted to, I guess, recreate some of the dishes that they were used to back in their cocina. So they brought along eggs, they brought along the butter, flour, sugar. And as a result, you will find a lot of desserts that are named with very Spanish-sounding names, like, as I mentioned before, tocino de consello, leche flan, ensamada, and alike. So, but one of the things that people don't quite realize is most of our food, whilst it sounds very Spanish, a lot of that is actually tied into Mexican roots. And I think, you know, for example, what people didn't realize is when the Spaniards come, they would do a lot of trade between the Philippines, which was considered their Asian quarters, and then they would actually trade across to the Americas, and that was referred to as a galleon trade. And as a result, a lot of our dishes actually pay more homage to the Mexican roots than it did to the Spanish roots. And yeah, we have a lot of dishes that use, for example, ingredients that are quite native in Mexico, such as a chuete or a nato seed, which is, you know, this seed that actually when you crush down, it gives you this beautiful red-orange hue that's actually added to a lot of our dishes like menudo or afritada, which sounds Spanish in its naming convention, but it's actually sort of tied into an ingredient that was sourced from Mexico instead of Spain.
The other big influence, Grace, was of course that of the United States, not necessarily globally thought of as a positive influence on food cultures. What happened to Filipino food as a result of American presence?
The American presence really sort of brought along the advent of processed food, which I think is probably not something that we should continue to eat, given the fact that that's, I think, I would say, sort of attributable to the high blood pressure as well as diabetes that many Filipinos now have to sort of like suffer through and so forth. But it did bring along also the reverence to Western brands, which I think also is a shame, because I think one of the things that you will find when you go back to the Philippines is people seek to eat at, you know, Western restaurants as opposed to enjoying the restaurants that really celebrate our cultural roots. But we're actually starting to see a change in that. When we sort of like work with some of the culinarians back in the Philippines, you can really see them starting to embrace that pre-colonial sort of cooking techniques as well as ingredients, starting to shun away from what actually was imposed upon them through the US occupation of the Philippines. Because I think, you know, unfortunately, like many colonized regions, we still have reverence to our colonizer, but we're starting to see that being unwound by the newer and younger generation that are looking to sort of embrace what came before they occupied our lands.
Grace, this is where the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival comes into the picture, and this process of breaking cover. Tell us what's happening there.
So on the last weekend of Melbourne Food and Wine, on the 1st and the 2nd, we will be hosting a weekend full of fiesta time at the Mission to Seafarers, which is a historic site in the Docklands, which provide rest and respite and other social welfare services to seafarers that come and port in our Melbourne city. So we're using that site because it's in honour of the fact that about 60% of seafarers that come into Melbourne are of Filipino heritage. And so we really wanted to sort of celebrate that history as well as the present circumstances, but do it in a way that's quite unique. So the first day we'll be doing a launch of the Calamanset story, which is both a publication and a documentary, where we worked with a production team from the Philippines, Erwan Husoff of Feature Films, and we will be showcasing that as part of the Saturday event together with an anthology of Filipino migrant stories, which will be a publication. And part of this will also then foray into Sunday, which we're gathering together our barrio of Filipino food vendors. And these are both small and big name people from our Filipino food scene here in Melbourne and Sydney. And we're going to be offering what Fidesz has been alluding to, and that is the fiesta vibes over here in Melbourne, and bring lots of food, lots of fun. One of the things that we'll highlight is the fact that the calamanset is going to be our hero ingredient and will hopefully be seen in both the seafood pamayan as well as the DV cider collaboration that we did together with Jenny Abulos from DV Cider.
Sounds delicious and it sounds exciting. Thank you both, and congratulations on those efforts and your work too in propelling this Australian enthusiasm for Filipino food. Much appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
That was Grace Ginto and Fidesz May Santos, co-founders of Filipina Australian Women's Collective, the Entre Pinays. Their Melbourne Food and Wine Festival event, Seafood Stars and Stories at Seafarers, happening, it's April 1 and 2. We will put a link if you're passing through Melbourne or in town and keen to have your senses delighted, a link to that on the Blueprint page at the Radio National website. It's the Blueprint for Living, ABC RN.
listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.